So today we're looking at the role of social value with SMEs in mind particularly. And we want to just cover a couple of the hot topics at the moment, particularly looking at the Tech UK report that recently came out. And the fact that it shared some statistics around 76% of SMEs finding it really hard to address social value within their tenders. So really great to have you join and listening to our first in this series of the Value Positive podcasts. And really, I'd just like to start by bringing Rich and Chris into the conversation, really. You both work with a lot of SMEs, both supporting with public sector procurement and social value development as well. So what's your take on these findings? You know, what are you hearing from clients? What's going on out there?
Thanks, Nat. It's great to be here. And, you know, those Tech UK results, we're a member of Tech UK and we fed into that survey. And I've been a long-term member of them. And I sit personally on a number of their boards. And whilst it's shocking to see, it's actually no surprise. I think we're certainly hearing from clients that are bidding into public sector bids, going for public sector bids, that they are struggling very much with the social value questions, the lack of consistency in what's being asked. There's been a lack of by the buyer. There's also a lack of making the questions that you're being asked relating to the contract. People are losing bids because of the social value questions. A lot of the clients that we support on bids, they have when they send us their answers for remediation, more than anything we get to see. So, you know, we'll see that they offer pretty similar services and pricing to people, but now that the social value, what they're able to give back to the organisations that they're bidding into, it is really making quite a difference now. And I think that they're struggling to really understand about how they can make the best of it.
I completely echo what Chris is saying, actually. We're seeing similar results and certainly having similar feedback to this area. What we kind of feel that there is an underlying perception that actually social value is just another fad. It's something that the government have come up with to try to develop a greater value, but pushing on that responsibility back down to the SME. And unfortunately, the feeling is that it's becoming more cumbersome and making it harder for organisations with often limited resources to be able to bid for contracts. But actually, if we look at it in a slightly different way, that once we can demystify what social value is and help understand how to articulate it, actually SMEs can often challenge some of those perceptions and be able to move forward. Now, I think it's also keen to understand that because it's perceived to be a barrier, there is an issue that they could be losing bids as a result of not taking up and not engaging proactively with social value. So actually, if we look at it in a slightly different way and say, okay, yes, by not engaging with it could be an issue. However, it could also be a very good USP. And the consistent themes of why people perceive this is, I think SMEs are busy on a day-to-day basis. The cost of living crisis, challenges with new regulations and legislations, and just competing in the day-to-day sense, this feels another add-on. So actually challenging some of those perceptions about where capacity and resources could be limited could be a key to perhaps changing that perception into something a bit more positive. And probably the other aspect there would be cost. Does it cost more? Actually, it doesn't need to cost more because there's many great things an organisation can do without it, say, costing more both in time and money.
So really what I'm hearing from both of you then is that it's definitely an area that SMEs are needing some additional support with, both in terms of understanding what social value is, but also more importantly, I think, where they're already creating it and where they can already build a strong response into bids And I would also say that, you know, the role of SMEs into larger contracts where there's a bigger supply chain as well. What would your thoughts be and comments be around that? That actually there's an awful lot of, you know, value that the tier one contractors or the prime contractors can bring out through working with SMEs as well. How do we get SMEs to be able to better leverage that?
It's a great point there, actually. I think within the business-to-business world, I think understanding what your business requires of you and actually ask those initial questions, because social value can be so broad, so wide, and can be challenging if it's not looked at in a very strategic, concise way. So being able to understand what your organisations are looking for in terms of education or skills or employment and volunteering. We know fighting climate change is something which is very big and very in the present. So being able to help your bidding organisation to demonstrate their value, actually what they in turn do is leverage your own value. So there's a bit of a kind of a trade-off here. And also, if we think about it as a bigger picture, it's what not only the right thing to do, but it's actually supporting that recruitment, training and retention. And because of that, it's helping you attract talent. So it's a very competitive world. And actually, if you've got, particularly within the tech industries and the wider SME sector, if you can attract the right staff at the right time with those key skills, you're more likely to retain and therefore be able to deliver the great products in which you hope to do.
Chris, what would your thoughts be around how are you supporting SMEs that might be going into, say, a public framework, but you know they're going to be working potentially alongside some prime contractors that want to have more of a local footprint? How do you see that as an opportunity for SMEs to really kind of champion their own social value and be on a more equal social value footing?
I find that a lot of the work that we do initially is also based around on de-fearing the whole yeah. concept of social value. But, you know, a lot of organisations that we work with, first of all, they'll come in, they'll see the things like the Tech UK report, and they're like, oh, you know, we hear people are losing bids and this is all going to be too much for them. And it can start to put them off. When they actually start to really get down to what they do as an organisation, small businesses usually have a lot of the stuff in their own DNA already, the things you need to do. Certainly around how you treat your staff, employee health and well-being, the things you're doing, as Rich mentioned, around the climate change. For those of them that are working in the local environment, they're very passionate about the areas that they're working, especially if it's somewhere where they live or their staff live. So getting that out and actually helping them put that into understanding that they actually do have a lot of this stuff in their DNA already can help set them apart from a lot of the large organisations that, you know, I don't want to use the term value washing, but it can be a way that, that social value is seen from a large organisation as not as just being some part of some larger, big ESG sort of initiative. And a lot of it doesn't really translate well locally. Also, if you look from a policy perspective, the government has had a long-standing policy to where 30% of its supply chain spend should go to SMEs. So there is a large opportunity then for SMEs to become part of those larger systems integrated, or the larger suppliers. They're actually needed there. And, a lot of the larger suppliers do have some fairly well integrated and useful programs to bring SMEs on. There was a great tender recently for a framework run by a mix of Crown Commercial Services and HMRC, where they had lots of specific targets that were saying that on each of the contracts that are going to be offering through that framework, a percentage of that spend will be guaranteed to SMEs. And the larger organisations have to actually prove then one who they're going to give that to, and then how they're going to give that spend. So there's some very positive stuff coming in there for you, but you know you have to be in the game to be part of it and be in that framework and be part of the supply chain to actually take advantage of that as well.
Thanks, Chris. A couple of things for me there that really stand out are, the government push with the SME mandate into the larger frameworks, and for the SMEs to be aware of that and to use that in their own network development as they're going out and getting involved with some of the larger organisations. And I think your other comment about value washing, that's a really interesting use of language. And, you know, we've seen the term greenwashing around for quite some time in sort of the climate change sort of movement. But particularly there's a point here around the authentic nature of value creation and actually how SMEs can perhaps more quickly validate their position on social value. And I think that's a really interesting.
I think value washing can be a thing, and there is a danger if it becomes very political and it becomes just another way of doing business. I think if we look at it from a slightly different perception and saying, as long as any communication of an SME on what they deliver, how they deliver it is authentic, it's legitimate and stands up to rigour, then actually value washing becomes less poignant to that particular organisation. What we can also consider that, unfortunately, the term greenwashing has been around for multiple years around the environmental agenda. And that's purely been centred on, we do some great work, you know, in the UK, but unfortunately we don't have the same initiatives, or we do some more evasive work in perhaps Ireland, for example. So actually, if we only celebrate the good and not recognise perhaps the not so good, it becomes less genuine. So we need to do something around that. I think with the SMEs, with the social value tool, which you refer to, it does level the playing field, because we've got a situation where actually this is not just always looking at historical delivery. This is looking at future commitments. So an organisation doesn't need to always rely on what it's done in the past. So SMEs are no longer necessarily at a disadvantage. This is about making those future-based commitments and actually knowing where they want to develop as part of their own pipeline. So central government have those five different themes, centred around your economic inequalities, your equality, diversity, health and wellbeing, COVID recovery and fighting climate change. If we look at it from a local perspective, actually that changes and it's more dynamic, it's more specific to a locality. So by understanding where you want to grow as a business and where your pipeline of strategic growth is coming from, both from a business to business, but also business to government, you can actually tailor that offering and be very localized with it, i.e. what value could you deliver within Midlands if you're going for a Midland contract, where larger organizations can be a slightly disadvantage, where they tend to look at it from more of a macro perspective. But that's not necessarily what a local organisation wants and also needs.
How can we make it easier for SMEs? What are some of those quick wins? We've talked about local spending. We've talked about where, staff live. What about things like volunteering, diversity of staff? You know, what would you both have to say on that? I mean, maybe Rich, if we just come to you on that first.
Yeah, there's quite a range of quick wins that can be adopted and also planned for. So a couple of things that all organisations have to do. They have to record where their staff live, and they have to record where and how they purchase goods and services from. So straight away, there's two angles here. So first of all, if we look at supply chain, on average, if an organisation, your client's premises, for example, so take Nottingham and Nottinghamshire or perhaps the UK, on average, every pound that you spend may be multiplied by 0.751. So straight away, you've got your purchase and sales ledgers, so you can analyse that data. Also thinking about, for every pound that you may spend with another SME, actually it's worth an additional 9p of value just by purchasing with a local business. And that increases up to 12p in the pound if you're starting to look at the charities or social enterprise. So straight away, you've got a quick win and you can start to develop your localized profile. You look at staff and volunteers. Well, actually, staff, if we look at their salary, for example, you all know where you live and where you pay salaries to for in the form of a staff member. On average, according to ONS, Office for National Statistics, there is an aspect of 52p in the pound of every pound that person would receive. They all spend locally. So again, you can demonstrate that local benefit and local value. But then actually, a lot of organisations start to consider about their traditional CSR, corporate and social responsibility agenda, which in essence, CSR is dead. Social value has taken place of that. You may be volunteering locally or contributing financially to a local community organisation. So essentially, one, record what that looks like, but start to make a judgment of where you volunteer your time. So, for example, spending an hour of a person's time painting a fence or doing some gardening, it's worthwhile. But in value terms, it's around £16. If you convert that and say, okay, what skills, knowledge and experience do we have as an organisation and with and throughout our staff team? Could a third sector, a charity or a social enterprise, another SME, benefit from that? So mentoring and coaching, that can be worth over £100 an hour. So actually, from a value proposition point of view, you've got value. It's just recording it. And then from a diversity point of view, which you raise, is first of all, it's actually understanding what your profile is. But you'll have that based on your HR systems. What we need to be able to demonstrate that an organisation is, wherever possible, reflective of a community in which they live, they reside, they work. So from an age and ethnicity, gender, all of that can come either from your staff records, but just doing a very simple survey and asking questions, ensuring though it is self-declared and not a mandatory requirement. So that information will start to give you a profile of your organisation and start to develop potential any salary gaps. So we've got that connected. And then also looking at potential areas for accessibility around mental health and potential physical health as well.
So there's quite a lot in there, Rich. Is there anything you could point people to, maybe to do some extra reading on that if they'd like to learn more? Would you recommend that they kind of head to any particular websites or?
Yep. Naturally, they can come to the Social Value Business website. That will be, you know, there's a wealth of information there. There's some great information on the Social Value Quality Mark CIC's website in terms of an audit and validation aspect. That's a good win. In terms of central government, if you look at the Social Value Model, PPN06, type that into Google, there's a good wealth of information in terms of direction. But then if you start to look at the national TOMs, national themes and outcome measures, they have a range of financial values that I mentioned. And also in development is something called the Global Value Exchange. Again, if you Google that, that will have a range of values that people like myself in the industry are actually creating to make it easier for SMEs in the first place.
Thank you. I mean, I'm sure people will appreciate being able to get some resource on this and also just to be able to do those quick calcs as well that they can perhaps put in front of some of those larger contractors that they might be negotiating with. Chris, from your point of view on the tenders, what types of accreditations, things can people sign up to that are relatively quick win, would you suggest?
In terms of accreditations, there's all sorts of things really you can get on there. There's things that will to help make people buyable, which is something that we spend quite a lot of our time doing. So, you know, there's certain things like having cyber essentials in place. These are things that are good housekeeping things to have. You'll definitely need to have your own carbon reduction plan. Start thinking about, and this is really for the larger organizations, but it's good housekeeping anyway to start thinking about modern slavery statements and looking at the supply chain and sort of things like that. I think from a whole bidding perspective, though, Natalie, what we need to really, the authorities, organisations, sorry, need to be looking at is getting up the value, getting up the chain a little bit earlier. I mean, we definitely encourage the organisations we work with to not bid blind, for example. You know, there's, if the first time you hear of a tender coming through and you're responding to certain questions is when you actually see the tender, there's a big chance you're not going to win it. Okay. So the opportunities there for SMEs are on a quick wins perspective is to look at the current contracts that they have, find out when they're going to be relet, and then start that engagement earlier with their buyers so that they can really get to understand what social value means to them. And they can start talking about the values that they can bring in as well. Yeah. That whole thing about getting in front of buyers early is so important in all of this, because it's still a very immature model. And we're finding, as I said earlier in the opening statements, that a lot of buyers still aren't relating the questions that they're asking to the subject matter that they're talking about. They're just using generic questions. And that's one of the biggest problems we're finding SMEs are struggling with, is, well, you know, how does this question here relate to what I do for you down to your, and how's it going to be evaluated to the thing that you're asking about? So the earlier you can get into that conversation, the more you can actually, I don't say influence, but you can help guide guide the authority to do the best thing it possibly can and make sure everything's nice and equitable. But also you're getting a feel for where the authority that you're working, you're looking to really, just to understand what they're on about, so you can, you know, the most successful bidders that we see are ones that have already had some form of communication. They don't have to be an incumbent. They had some communication with the buyers that they're looking to work with, and they're able to understand that emotional connection and put that into their.
Sorry, Chris, I was just going to ask on that. How can an SME listen to this, get further up the value chain? How can they find out about things earlier? Is there anything in Advice Cloud where you do sort of early notifications or email updates? Is there anything where they can, you know, try and get ahead of themselves a little bit through forward planning? What might your suggestion be there?
Well, certainly we do lots of market engagement work on behalf of the public sector buyers we work with, as do other organisations like Tech UK. Again, they're very, very good at doing this. You can look at your own contracts that you have existing already. We have spend data available on our websites. There are also partner organisations such as Stottles, who offer tender portals and details when contracts and that are expiring. There's quite a whole raft of information out there. There's free information from things like Contracts Finder and Find a Tender Service from the government. It can be a bit tricky to navigate those, which is why aggregators like Stottles and others, people like Tussle, do make a reasonable living out of bringing that data into their own portals that they have. So you can certainly find out and work backwards then from when the contract end date is. If you know how long a tender is going to take, usually takes between 3 to 6 months to run, you can start planning your sales campaigns or your fact-finding campaigns.
Before we wrap up, any sort of closing comments, Rich and Chris, what would you like to encourage the listeners to be able to do? If you had one piece of advice to give to them, what would that be today?
If I can split into two, if I can be cheeky, I think the first one is consider the 80-20 rule. 80% of your social value response into any sort of business needs to be forward focused. 20% can be anchored in the past to give demonstration of where you've been, your values, your ethics, and give a confidence from the reader. The second part is alignment. Alignment to what your stakeholders value, what your current and future pipeline value, and actually link that back to how you can then go on that journey. For example, your prompt payment code, sign up, it's a quick win, doesn't cost anything, and you probably are paying your suppliers on time. Your business charter, good business charter, the living wage, disability confidence, all those things will just give the organization that you're trying to do business with additional confidence that you are the right organization, you act responsibly, and also those confidence that alignment to their needs is going to be delivered.
Thanks, Rich. And finally, comment from yourself, Chris.
Again, I'd like to split it into two there, if you don't mind. So I think the first piece is, if you are in a tender situation, don't be afraid to ask questions. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of the questions that are asked, they're all anonymized, and the responses and answers are sent out anonymously. So there's no embarrassment there about saying, what do you mean by this? How are you going to score this? What does this mean to you as a buyer? Because it can get them thinking about it if they've not put it clearly in their tender documentation. Secondly, we mentioned on the bid library side of things, this is really important, is to seek feedback. It can be quite tricky to get feedback from public sector buyers, but you should be persistent and kind when you're asking them to say, this is going to help you improve. Then use that feedback that you get to get your to start to build your bid library up, to have the most successful answers. Now, don't use those successful answers there repeatedly as boilerplate. Make sure it's tailored, as always, to the subject matter that's being asked, and you know, and the way that you're answering that. So those are the two things that I'd suggest are probably the most helpful for the moment from this. Thank you.
Thank you both. I mean, I've really enjoyed this podcast chat with you on our first of the Value Positive series. You know, we've wanted to take this time out to really connect with SMEs where we already support and create a lot of value with them. And I think that for us, this has been a great time to just reflect on some of those insights, to pass on some quick wins, and to encourage SMEs to be bolder and to recognise and celebrate all of the value that they do already have. So thank you both for your time on this session. Please, listeners, if you have comments, if you have questions, you can follow up with any of the organisations, any of the people on this call, and we really look forward to your feedback, and we look forward to following up with the second session soon. Thank you both.
Thanks very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.